I'm off. Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for finding us and tuning in. Welcome to Monday night. I wanted to comment just briefly on, Romney's big adventure, starting with the Olympics. And this guy just keeps putting his foot in his mouth over and over again, doesn't he? I've never seen anything like it. I don't know if you're aware, but when he was among the crazy, I mean, seriously, warmongering, crazed, bloodthirsty things that he said when he was in Israel, he also displayed once again his horrific ignorance. He was talking with some rich Jewish citizens, Israeli Jews, and because he's there to raise money. And, of course, his point is he would be a harder ass on the Israeli-Palestinian issue than Obama has been. But he said to the rich folks in the room with him that he was just amazed that Israel's health care cost is 8% of GDP. You know where I'm going with this, don't you? Okay. And he talked about it for a couple of minutes. He talked about how bad it was in the United States. And apparently none of his aides briefed him on the fact that the Israeli healthcare system is completely socialized medicine. That's why it's at 8%. And also at the opening of the Olympics, when it was a 4 or 5 minute segment in the opening ceremonies in tribute to the National Health Service of Great Britain. Socialized medicine. And of course, the Romneys were sitting there, I saw a cutaway shot of the Romneys sitting at the open. Well, they were standing when the American team walked in. But aside from all the half-witted moronic statements that he's made, to say to the Israelis, wow, you people are really great. Healthcare costs, 8% of GDP. That's amazing. It's admirable. And, of course, the Israeli healthcare system is completely socialized. You have to remember the people who founded the State of Israel were socialists and communists. Don't argue with me on that, okay? Just don't. If you want the gentler word socialist, that's fine with me. And the system that they set up was pure, unadulterated, total democratic socialism. Oh, it's watching Romney bounce around and realizing that millions of people are going to vote for him in this country. It's enough to just turn my stomach. Oh, well. This hour is being sponsored by Dennis Black. Thank you, Dennis. And his message might keep up the good fight and hang in there with about 9 exclamation points after it. I will, Dennis, until they pry this microphone from my cold, dead fingers. Oh, did you hear the latest about the Republican National Committee or National Convention in Tampa? Nobody from the Bush crime family has been invited to speak or even attend. Now, why do you suppose that is? And Cheney today, with the heart that he stole from some innocent human pumping in his chest, Cheney, was it today or yesterday? Sometime, I just saw it on the news today. He said that John McCain's choice of Sarah Palin as his vice presidential running mate 4 years ago was a mistake. Big mistake. And, of course, McCain immediately responded and said something to the effect of, Cheney should mind his own business and stay in the stealing body parts business and out of politics. But there you have it. Dick Cheney, he's back. His psycho daughter, she's back. Todd Palin is back. I'll have more about that in a second. He's teaming up with General Wesley Clark. Oh, for Christ's sake. We'll get to that tonight, too. If you've been watching any of the Olympics, you've probably seen some promos talking about a reality show coming up that will be co-hosted by retired U.S. General Wesley Clark and Todd Palin. Now, this is, as David Swanson writes about this, it's a reality show, a war-otainment reality show with no apparent role for real reality, as opposed to fake reality? I don't know. Anyway, the ads brag about the use of real bullets in this program. The program is going to be, the title is Stars Earn Stripes. Stars, that would be, you know, the actors and singers and, you know, like Dancing with the Stars, I guess. Stars Earn Stripes is the name of it. The ads brag about the use of real bullets. Of course, the chances that any of the celebrities engaged in what is being called war competition. Can you goddamn believe that? This is on NBC. Can you believe this? The chances of any of the celebrities actually being shot is essentially what it was for John Wayne, as he promoted war while dodging the draft over and over and over and over again. Swanson writes that Stars Earn Stripes is being produced by the TV genius behind Donald Trump's Apprentice and Sarah Palin's Alaska. NBC is promoting the show during its Summer Olympics telecast as the next big sporting event. But the sport it's exhibiting is war. Did you get this? Now, according to what I have here, on this program, Stars Earn Stripes, celebrities will pair up with members of the U.S. military to compete at warlike tasks, including, quote, long-range weapon fire, end quote. Of course, there won't be any of the killing and dying that goes on in a real war. As Swanson points out, our wars kill huge numbers of people, primarily civilians, often children and the elderly. NBC is not showing this reality on its war-otainment show. Of course, they don't show that on their news programs either. Now, in other countries, media show the face of war. And that gives people a very different view of war making. I've talked about how 12 years ago, when I moved back from Chicago, I went to work for CNN International, and how different it was from domestic CNN. And some of the footage that we showed at the time was footage that you were not going to see on American TV. Now, you could get CNNI in the States, but it was primarily for foreign consumption. And as David writes, Swanson writes, in the United States, our tax dollars are spent by the billions each year marketing the idea that war is a sport and associating the military with sporting events. Media companies like NBC are complicit in the propaganda. While 57% of federal discretionary spending goes to the military, weapons makers can't seem to get enough of our tax dollars. So, in the spirit of transferring veterans care to the realm of private charity, Stars Earn Stripes, the program, will give prize money each week to, quote, military-based charities, end quote, in order to, quote, send a message, end quote. Jesus Christ. This is a way of getting you and I, well, not you and I, but the way of getting Americans used to the idea of war as a permanent condition. and war as entertainment. All right, a little more on this when we come back. This is astonishing to me, just goddamn astonishing. NBC, of course, you know, their minority ownership is General Electric. General Electric makes billions from the murder business. NBC TV program coming out this fall entitled Stars Earn Stripes. And on this program, celebrities will pair up with members of the U.S. military to compete at warlike tasks, including long-range weapons fire. I wonder if they'll go out on patrols. I wonder if they will sit at a council and use predator drones to wipe out families. This is just insane. And of course, as I mentioned, one of NBC's corporate parents, GE, as David Swanson points out in this piece, takes war very seriously, but not as human tragedy. They take it seriously as a profit center. Now, Swanson goes on to say, a retired general, Wesley Clark, hosting a war attainment show is another step in the normalization of permanent war. And consider for a moment, Swanson writes, who that retired general is. During the 1999 bombing of Yugoslavia, commanded by General Wesley Clark, civilians in a TV station were bombed while cluster bombs and depleted uranium were used. Had Clark done these things for another nation, NBC would probably favor his prosecution and certainly not employ him. Now, if you want to know more about this, go to Democracy Now! And type into their search engine Wesley Clark, and you will find a program where Democracy Now! Confronts Clark over his bombing of civilians. Now, I always had the feeling that Clark had gotten past all of that. I don't know. There was a time when I thought Clark would have made a fairly interesting candidate for the presidency. I knew he was the supreme commander during the war in Yugoslavia. But good God. So as David Swanson concludes, stars earn stripes. Is NBC treating war as a sport? Sort of like the Hunger Games. What Swanson is asking, there's a website, starsearnstripes.org. You can go to this website, and they're asking NBC to stop treating war as a sport and to air an in-depth segment showing the reality of civilian victims of recent U.S. wars or on any program, anytime in the coming months. So you can go to this website, starsearnstripes.org, Swanson says, we've provided some resources to help NBC research and show the reality of war. Oh, I'll bet. I bet he has. StarsEarnStripes.org. That's not the website for the program. That is a website, I'm sure, that is going to generate petitions. What did I say a couple of weeks ago? Petitions to get NBC to pull this. But General Wesley Clark and Todd Palin? What kind of madness is that? Or is it just me? I mean, this is insanity, isn't it? No, Mike, it's entertainment in the age of madness, maybe. Stars earn stripes. Now, when we come back, I have something for you from Hancock Field Air National Guard Base in New York. It starts this way. It's from the Times this morning. From his computer console here in the Syracuse, New York suburbs, Colonel D. Scott Brenton remotely flies a Reaper drone that beams back hundreds of hours of live video of insurgents, his intended targets, going about their daily lives 7,000 miles away in Afghanistan. Sometimes he and his team watch the same family compound for weeks. He says, quote, I see mothers with children. I see fathers with children. I see fathers with mothers. I see kids playing soccer. You can probably figure out where this is going to go, too, right? We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
When I need some company, you got that mystery. Lord, I need a plan. All I got is this compromise and a bag full of alibis. Lord, as empty as a bottle of whiskey in my shaking hand. It's gonna be easy.
It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Dennis Black. Thank you, Dennis. This message might keep up the good fight and hang in there. Thanks, Dennis, very much. Moss writes, listening over White Rose, I recommend describing the hyping of the Imperial War Machine with the term warnography, to show how closely it resembles pornography. Signed, your supportive paleoecologist, Moss. Warnography. So, Hancock Field Air National Guard Base in New York apparently is one of the centers. There are several around the country where the officers, and it's always an officer, commits remote murder against people who have no idea that they're being murdered by somebody in New York. And this particular officer, Colonel D. Scott Brenton, says, I see mothers with children. I see fathers with children. I see fathers with mothers. I see kids playing soccer. End quote. And according to Elizabeth Boomeller, who wrote this for the Times, when the call comes for him to fire a missile and kill a militant, And the Times does not put quotes around the word militant, kill a militant. And that time only comes, Colonel Brenton said, when the women and children are not around. When the time comes, he says, the hair on the back of his neck stands up, just as it did when he used to line up targets with his F-16 fighter jet. And afterward, just like the old days, he compartmentalizes, he says. Quote, I feel no emotional attachment to the enemy. I have a duty, and I execute the duty. End quote. Jesus Christ. Brenton acknowledges the peculiar new disconnect of fighting a telewar with a joystick and a throttle from his padded seat in American suburbia. And by the way, these drones are not only revolutionizing American warfare, but they're changing also in profound ways the lives of the people who, quote, fly them, end quote. Anyway, Colonel Brenton says when he was deployed in Iraq, quote, you land and there's no more weapons on your F-16. People have an idea of what you were just involved with, end quote. And he says he now steps out of a dark room of video screens, his adrenaline still surging after squeezing the trigger, and commutes home past fast food restaurants and convenience stores to help with homework. But always alone with what he has done. He says, quote, it's a strange feeling. No one in my immediate environment is aware of anything that occurred, end quote. How do you do that? How do you watch people on your video screen for days? Until the opportune moment comes to kill them. With absolutely zero risk in the moment, anyway, that you are going to be killed back or even wounded or shot down, taken prisoner, tortured. Nothing. You're sitting at a council. I mean, this is so goddamn creepy to me, I can hardly get my mind around it. How do people do this? How does this colonel and any of the people Elizabeth Boumiller describes in these in this article, how do you do that? What has been removed from your consciousness that you can do this? There's a difference between this and combat and it actually where soldiers on both sides or whatever actually deployed, right? It's a strange feeling, he says. Now, the Air Force is moving chaplains and medics just outside the drone operation centers to help the so-called pilots deal with the bad days. For instance, if they see an image of a child killed in error. Yeah, I guess chaplains and medics would be necessary, right? The Times goes on, among the toughest psychological tasks is the close surveillance for aerial sniper missions. Jesus. Reminiscent of the East German Stasi officer, absorbed by the people he spies on in the movie The Lives of Others. You ever seen that? Now, a drone pilot and his partner, a sensor operator who manipulates the aircraft's camera, observes the habits of a militant as he plays with his children, talks to his wife, visits his neighbors. They then try to time their strike when, for example, his family is out at the market. Colonel Hernando Ortega, the chief of aerospace medicine for the Air Education Training Command, who helped conduct a study last year on the stresses on drone pilots, said, quote, they watch this guy do bad things, and then his regular old life things, and at some point, some of the stuff might remind you of stuff you do yourself or you did yourself. You might gain a level of familiarity that makes it a little difficult to pull the trigger. I mean, this is just unbelievable. And Elizabeth Boumiller wrote, of a dozen pilots, sensor operators, and supporting intelligence analysts recently interviewed from three American military bases, none acknowledged the kind of personal feelings for Afghans that would keep them awake at night after seeing the bloodshed left by missiles and bombs. Not one spoke of any kind of, they're not people. They're just people-like things on a video screen. She goes on, but all of them spoke of a certain intimacy with Afghan family life that traditional pilots never see from 20,000 feet, and that even ground troops seldom experience. Dave, an Air Force major who flew drones from 2007 to 2009 at Creech Air Force Base in Nevada, and who now trains drone pilots at Holloman Air Force Base in New Mexico, Dave says, quote, you see them wake up in the morning, do their work, go to sleep at night. By the way, the Air Force citing what it says are credible threats, forbids pilots to disclose their last names. Senior commanders who speak to the media, like Colonel Brenton in Syracuse, use their full names. Anyway, some pilots spoke of the roiling emotions after they fire a missile. Will, an Air Force officer who is a pilot at Creech and now trains others at Holloman, said, quote, there was a good reason for killing the people that I did, and I go through it in my head over and over and over, but you never forget about it. It never just fades away, I don't think. Not for me. End quote. The Air Force, by the way, now has more than 1,300 drone pilots, about 300 less than it needs, stationed at more than 13 bases across the United States. And by 2015, this is where some of the three-quarters of a trillion weapons budget is going to go. By 2015, the Pentagon projects that the Air Force will need more than 2,000 drone pilots for combat air patrols operating 24 hours a day worldwide. What are they planning? This is 2012. By 2015, this is what they want. The Air Force is already training more drone pilots than fighter and bomber pilots combined. Now, the pilots who fly, quote, these video machines say the best days are when ground troops thank them. People out who have been deployed. Thank them for keeping them safe. Ted, an Air Force major and an F-16 pilot who flew Reapers from Creech Air Force Base, recalled how troops on an extended patrol away from their base in Afghanistan were grateful when he flew a Reaper above them for 5 hours so they could get some sleep one night. They told him, he recalled, quote, we're keeping one guy awake to talk to you, but if you can, just watch over and make sure nobody's sneaking up on us, end quote. Now, all the operators dismiss the notion that they're playing a video game. They also reject the word drone because they say that word describes an aircraft that flies on its own. Their planes are remotely patrolled or remotely piloted aircraft. Can you believe this? I mean, sure you can. I mean, this is the U.S. of A. This is what Team America does now. And what makes these people, they don't even call them terrorists, they call them militants. A little bit more on this when we come back. Isn't this interesting?
Blind Monkey Right. It's Mike Malloy.
We were young together. We were on the ball. We did not
10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Dennis Black. Thank you, Dennis. His message might keep up the good fight and hang in there. Indeed. So the drone pilots, the ones who fly, quote, quote, these remotely controlled aircraft, in various parts of the world, the only ones made available to the New York Times reporter, Elizabeth Boumeller, of course, are the ones that are operating these aircraft in Afghanistan. Again, all the operators dismiss the notion that they're playing a video game, and they reject the word drone because a drone flies on its own, and they call their planes remotely piloted aircraft. Joshua, a sensor operator who worked at Creech for a decade and is now a trainer at Holloman, said, quote, I don't have any video games that ask me to sit in one seat for 6 hours and look at the same target. One of the things we tried to be into our crews is that this is a real aircraft and with a real human component, and whatever decisions you make, good or bad, there's going to be actual consequences. In his 10 years at Creech, he said without elaborating, I've seen some pretty disturbing things. And then in closing, this. All of the pilots who once flew in cockpits say they do miss the sensation of flight, which for Colonel Brenton extends to the F-16, the flybys that he did for the Syracuse Memorial Day Parade downtown. To make up for it, he sometimes heads out on weekends in a small propeller plane, which he calls a bug smasher. He said, quote, it's nice to be up in the air, end quote. Chaplains? They have chaplains and doctors who have been assigned to wait outside the drone operation centers to help the people committing remote murder deal with the bad days. What is a good day? I mean, when you're doing this, and apparently, according to what I can gather from this article, I mean, this is real, on one sense, real intimate stuff. It's like if you were watching home movies or you were shooting home movies of a family that you didn't know. And you watch them for days. You're shooting all these home movies, these home videos. And then on a certain day, when mama and the children and so on and so forth are, how do they put it, gone to market, then you zero in on the person you've been watching for days and weeks and kill him. And if it turns out that mama had left a couple of the kids behind in the house that the militant went into just before you launched your predator or you launched your Hellfire missile, and those children are blown up too, well, you know, call the chaplain. Let me suggest to anyone who gives a damn about this story, the chaplains are not going to help you guys. They're not going to help you at all. You're committing murder. You're violating one of your God's commandments. No. This is not a justifiable war. What's the term? This is none of that. You are committing murder, officer, sir. You are swooping out of the sky, more or less. Your missile is swooping out of the sky while you're sitting on your ass in a video room back in the States, and you're killing people. You're just killing people. I mean, that's all you're doing. You're not fighting a war. You're not defending freedom and justice the American way. You're killing people. You're goddamn killing people. And this chaplain waiting outside to soothe you and tell you that Jesus forgives you. No, Jesus doesn't. Jesus is going to rip your goddamn head off when you die. Jesus is going to pour acid into your neck. Jesus is going to rip off your arms and legs and eviscerate you. So don't listen to the chaplain. You are going to suffer the most horrible suffering because you're going to live with this. Just like this one colonel or major or whatever the hell he was said, well, you know, I sometimes. So your chaplain is not going to do anything for you. Your chaplain, in the first place, is praying to the ceiling, to the light fixture, you know, as he puts his arm around you and tells you, well, now, my son, don't worry. War is hell. You're not fighting a war. You're committing murder. You're committing murder. Jesus, God. So this, you know, as you watch some of the Olympics tonight and you hear the USA, USA, you know, this is part of USA, I guess, right? What we're doing. You have any problem with this, you right-wingers? Huh? This is like the people that justified the nuclear bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Well, you know, we were about ready to invade. It would have cost 1 million American lives. A. Bull. B. So the implication there is very quick and to the point. You know, the Japanese lives, of course, are more important than American lives, so we firebomb with nuclear weapons. There. Oh, never mind. Really doesn't matter, does it? Well, I'm glad I was able to cheer you up here the first hour. Come on back if you can, and we'll talk about fun things. Sponsored by Linda Peterson. Her message, thank you for inspiring us to keep it lit out here behind the orange curtain. We know where that is, don't we? Thank you, Linda. Now, in a way of sort of dovetailing with the what we were talking about last hour about these drone aircraft. The argument is, well, this cuts down on the number of U.S. casualties because we don't have to have soldiers on the ground. The very idea of warfare is being completely changed, obviously, into something that is kind of futuristic, science fiction-y kind of craziness. So if we have this technology, how long will it take for our, you know, enemies to have the same technology? Will they have young people of their nationality sitting in isolated rooms someplace with their religious people outside the door, and they will be targeting Americans, of course. I mean, why not? But this second story I have tonight is a real shocker. You think the first one was a shocker? This is something that is, I don't think I've ever heard this discussed. I don't think I've ever heard it talked about. And except for the article in Huffington Post today, I don't think I've ever seen it in print. Anywhere, ever. No conversation, no discussion on news programs, nothing. And here it is. For a growing number of soldiers and Marines whose genitals were damaged or destroyed by blasts from IEDs while in combat, the Pentagon has decided it will not provide some critical reproductive health benefits. Now, to put it bluntly, if you're sent to war and you're a male and an IED blast blows off your testicles, the U.S. government will not pay for your spouse to have in vitro fertilization or artificial insemination using donated sperm. This new policy was quietly adopted without announcement by the Defense Department. In response to the growing demands of the more than 1,800 veterans with genital wounds that the government that sent them to war now help them return to normal life, including raising a family. Demands from 1,800 soldiers, male soldiers, who have asked for some help here. The Pentagon decision to say no, according to the Huffington Post article, ends the hopes of a growing number of young Americans wounded in combat and unable to produce sperm who wanted to start a family. And in one recent U.S. military study, the average age of those with genital wounds was 24 years of age. And the majority of those in military service, almost 60%, are married. Now, obviously, they're talking about heterosexual marriages here. Or not so obviously, although I would think that that's what is being referred to. Pentagon officials were not immediately available to explain this decision to deny benefits to couples like, well, here's an example, Heather and Mark Latinsky. He's a Marine. He lost both legs and his left arm and his testicles to an IED blast in Afghanistan almost 2 years ago. He and his wife are 27 and 26. They decided to use donor sperm to begin their long-planned dream of raising a family. Now, I have to stop for a second. I mean, I have got to comment. Here's a guy, 26, who had both legs and arm and his testicles blown off, and he has a long-time dream of raising a family. The couple did. I guess this guy is referred to as what? This is the type of man that Republicans want dead. They don't want him coming back with no arms, one leg, and or no legs, one arm, and no testicles. And here's why. The cost of in vitro fertilization can be high. At the Walter Reed National Military Medical Center in Bethesda, where Mark here was a patient, it cost from $5,000 to $7,000 for each procedure. And this young couple was hoping the military would cover the cost. No, 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 no. No, 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 no. Those three-quarters of a trillion-dollar military budgets, they're not for people like this couple. They're for people like General Electric and Boeing, and I'm just go down the list, the military contractors, so that the CEOs and the investors in these countries can get rich. But if Mark here has his testicles blown off along with both legs and an arm and still is dreaming about having a family, well, the military is not going to help him. Why should they? Why should they? Maybe corporate America would step in and help him. Maybe the Koch brothers would set up a $10 billion fund. Ah, $10 million fund, you know, lunch money, for these 1,800 soldiers. So that they can reproduce if they want to, since they no longer have the capability of doing that. They left their testicles and other parts of their body on battlefields, so to speak. Since 2005, at least 1,875 American troops have suffered genital wounds. And, of course, they are among the 34,440 American battle casualties caused by roadside bombs in Iraq and Afghanistan, a total that includes over 3,000 dead and 31,394 wounded through May, according to the Defense Department. Most of those who suffer genital wounds or genital removal also lose one or more limbs to IED blasts, so the devastating loss of sexual function is compounded by the difficulties of adapting to life as an amputee. Now, all is not bad news, my goodness, for these wounded warriors. The compensation policies at the Pentagon and the Department of Veterans Affairs amounts to, well, the VA pays up to $100,000 to the severely wounded, like Mark Latinsky, to compensate for loss of income? $100,000? What? And to help finance adapting their home to wheelchairs and other needs. Last year, the VA also agreed to pay up to $50,000 for damage to or loss of genitals in combat. Genitals in combat. Well, now you know what they're worth. $50,000. And as the article says, for wounded warriors and their spouses, many of whom are unemployed, without significant income, they were supposed to go over and die for corporate America. They weren't supposed to go over and get grievously wounded and come back. It's embarrassing. They were supposed to die. So here they are. No job, no income, body parts missing, including testicles, young people. And for those of them who wanted to have a baby through artificial insemination with other sperm, the military says, no, don't think so. Don't think so. 'Cause I don't see no ticker tape.
Because each time you listen to right-wing radio, God kills a kitten.
Past the hour. Now, this is the part of the story that is just, I don't know how to put this. If this were a comedy story, if this were a big joke, this would be the punchline. It's not, and this isn't, but I'm just saying, I don't know how else to describe this. This is how the article ends up. In an effort to prevent more such genital wounds as Mark Latinsky experienced, the Pentagon last fall rushed 165,000 pairs of Kevlar-reinforced briefs to Afghanistan, along with 45,000 sets of armored overgarments designed to blunt the impact of shrapnel and blast on the lower torso. The measure had limited effect, according to a preliminary study completed in Afghanistan this spring for Task Force Paladin, which is responsible for all counter-IED training and operations in Afghanistan. The unpublished study found that for those injured by IEDs, 33% of those wearing the protective undergarments suffered partial or complete destruction of the testicles, compared with 46% of those who were not. It's just, I'm thinking to myself, how do I read something like this and try to process it and think, okay, well, this is part of our war. What war? What war? Oh, that thing in Afghanistan. Is that a war? Is that what we're fighting? We have people on the ground over there who are being blown to pieces, and then we have people over here who are sitting in front of video consoles blowing people to pieces, and our people are getting blown to pieces. And somebody tell me again real quick, what's the objective in Afghanistan? And no fair if you say peace, justice, the American way. No. What's the objective? And no fair if you say, well, Mike, freedom isn't free. We're fighting for freedom. No. No, we're not. That's not what we're fighting for. So what's the objective? Once again, anybody got any ideas? Come on, you right-wingers know everything about this kind of stuff. Come on. Anything? What's the objective? When you Republicans are going to vote for Mitt Romney, and Mitt Romney has made it very clear in Israel that he wants to start another one. Like George, he wants to be a war president. See, if he can be a war president, you know, that'll burnish his credentials when he goes to Mormon heaven or something. I don't know. These people are goddamn sick. They're sick. They're diseased. They're diseased. So Romney's over in the Middle East. I see all these reports today from the various wire services and news organizations asking if Mitt Romney just gave the green light that if he's elected president, he will support a unilateral attack by Israel on Iran. So you see what these rich son of a bitches are doing? Do you understand this? And yet this 26-year-old Marine who comes home minus two legs, an arm, and his sexual reproductive organs cannot even get corporate America to pay the $7,000. Some of these sons of bitches literally spend that on dinner for 10, but dinner. And he can't get, these young people cannot get corporate America to pay for the wife in this tragedy to be inseminated with someone else's sperm so that she can give birth, and that she and the soldier who's now had a third of his body blown off can go ahead and try to be a father. And they won't pay for that. No. Wait. Maybe if they looked at it differently, within 18 years, they would have another body that they could send to wherever we will be sending soldiers then, along with our drone aircraft and the predator drones and the Hellfire missiles and the death and destruction. Right? Huh? I mean, just bring in another generation. Don't they realize, doesn't corporate America realize that for every one of these soldiers who can't reproduce, corporate America is missing a chance to recruit another triple amputee.
Kill, kill, kill for me.
just had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. You know, I find this stuff during the day, and I just sit there and I'm kind of dumbfounded. I'm real aware of the remotely piloted aircraft that blow people away, but Elizabeth Boomeller, who writes for The Times, is, as far as I'm concerned, a good writer, a good journalist, and actually reading, especially down to the detail that she presents, the detail about the killers, not about the victims, but about the killers, is shocking. Is that the right word? And then to read about soldiers who have had their testicles blown off, and it is a subject or a topic or a story that I've never read or seen or heard about anyplace else. In popular media, I understand that, of course, it's an issue because these are people, these Americans, who have been sent to Afghanistan to do what? I'm still waiting for an email from someone, anyone, and I'm not talking about an ironic or a sarcastic email. I mean, truly, to state what's the goal. What is the military objective in Afghanistan? What is it? We have been there for 10 years. What's the objective? And, I ask that because I know nobody can, there is no objective except to try to get control of that government to the extent that when we finally do pull out the troops, corporate America will be able to come back in and start relieving the country of its natural resources, its minerals and all the things that are buried just beneath the surface in that country, apparently. This is how it's done. We send in the military. Ask Smedley Butler, who's been dead for 100 years, but ask Smedley Butler. Look him up. Asked what he thought about war, what the real function of it was 100 years ago. Christ. This hour is being sponsored by Linda Peterson, who writes, "Thank you for inspiring us to keep it lit out here behind the orange curtain." Yes. Thanks, Linda. Regarding the banksters in this country, I've kind of advocated this before. I thought, I've obliquely referred to this idea. I've said things like, well, in a different time, a different country, X would have happened. Well, X is happening even as we speak. An Iranian court has sentenced 4 people to death for their roles in a $1 billion banking fraud scandal that forced bank executives out of their jobs and tainted the government of President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. That's according to state media report today. It was embezzlement. It was discovered September last. It revolved around forged documents allegedly used by the directors of an Iranian investment company to secure loans totaling $2.6 billion to buy state-owned enterprises. 39 people were tried for their involvement in the fraud. A judiciary spokesman, told the state news agency, quote, we are typing their sentences now. And according to the sentence that was issued, 4 of the accused in this case were sentenced to death, end quote. 2 others were sentenced to life imprisonment. The others received sentences ranging from 25 years on down. Now, I'm opposed to the death penalty, totally. So I would recommend a life imprisonment for these predatory swine in this country, life imprisonment with no possibility of parole. And is that cruel and inhuman? Yeah, of course. Of course, this is where, you know, my idealism comes into a head-on collision with my rage at the people who do these things to people in this country. You know, with their cheating and their lying and their scams and their predatory capitalism. Usually when I refer to, well, in a different country, they would take them out behind the building and put a bullet in the back of their heads. I'm referring to China. But, you know, good ideas spread slowly sometimes, but they do spread. So, I wonder when it will come to this country. No. I've told you before about this product that's advertised on this program called Nova Joint. Now, I don't have these arthritic problems, so what I have to do, Kathy says, yet, what I have to do regarding this product is to go by what I'm hearing from people who actually, literally, write to our, not just our program, but to my, to the advertiser, or to the product people, and to our business partners. So, again, I mean, this is pretty astounding to me. I got an email from Susan in Washington. Now, I know a couple of listeners who are Susans in Washington. I don't know if this is her or not. But here's what she said about Nova Joint. Quote, I heard about Nova Joint from Mike and thought I would buy some for my 86-year-old husband who's been having some joint pain and trouble getting around. He tried glucosamine with no effect. But after just 3 weeks on Nova Joint, he has a spring in his step. Those achy joints that were keeping him up nights are gone now, and he's getting a good night's sleep. Thanks, Mike, and thanks, Nova Joint. So you might want to try, you know, if you have this problem, you might want to try arthritis or joint pain. Oh, I see. It was Susan from Washington that I know. I'll be darned. Well, there you go. I mean, these are real letters. I mean, I know, hard to believe. How many times have you seen the ads for something in especially in print? It'll have these little photographs of people that said, I tried this product and sure enough, my dandruff was gone in 3 days. And then it says, Ralph in Poughkeepsie. Right? And you look at that, you go, yeah, okay. So when these started coming in, I was unprepared for this. But it's just like what I said. I said, I don't know, last week or the week before, that the products that come from Heal and Hollers, Allison in Arkansas, that stuff is unbelievable. Well, apparently here's another one, Nova Joint, that is actually what it says it is. And for people to send us an email and say, thanks for putting advertising this on your program, I mean, wow. That's impressive. So anyway, all this is an unscheduled commercial. I'm just looking at a couple of notes here. I don't have a commercial scheduled for this time of the program, but I just wanted to mention that to you about Nova Joint. Try it. Dear God, try it. If you have need for it, try it. They have other products too. They have other products? Oh, do they? Well, see, that's what I'm saying. I don't know. It's just all of a sudden I'm getting these emails from people, getting these letters from people. Go to they have a, ad on our website? Okay. Just click there and check it out. Just try it, okay? And don't forget Helan Hollers. Helan-Hollers.com. Be-doo-doo-doo. Fat Tony Scalia is getting kind of weird. I think this guy's Opus Dei Catholicism is starting to eat his brain. He apparently on Sunday, I didn't watch any of this, but he renewed his criticism of Chief Justice John Roberts' reasoning in upholding the Affordable Care Act. And he said, he was asked whether he would time his retirement, he's 76, in order to let a conservative future president appoint a like-minded jurist. And he said, quote, I don't know. I haven't decided when to retire. He was on Fox News Sunday, of course. My wife doesn't want me hanging around the house. I know that. Oh, isn't that cute? Don't you just love it when some nasty old bastard man says, ah, my wife doesn't want me hanging around the house. Yeah, I think I'll keep being the executioner. I don't know. He says, of course, I would not like to be replaced by someone who immediately sets about undoing everything that I've tried to do for 25 years. 26 years. I mean, I shouldn't have to tell you that unless you think I'm a fool. Whoa. He brushed off Obama's comments about the Supreme Court, you know, having a responsibility not to undo what Congress did in this particular case, which I think Obama was ridiculous in saying that. That's precisely what the Supreme Court is supposed to do. But he said, quote, what can he do to me, referring to Obama? What can he do to any of us? We have life tenure. We have it precisely so that we will not be influenced by politics. You won't be influenced by politics. Fat Tony Scalia, you crack my ass up. You just truly do.
You can't have none.
The revolution starts right now. Here's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Linda Peterson. And her message is, thank you for inspiring us to keep it lit out here behind the orange curtain. Thanks, Linda. Juan Cole, writing an informed comment, is talking about the 10 most distasteful things about Romney's trip to Israel. Among other things, it is distasteful that Romney is clearly holding that fundraiser, he held that fundraising event, in some large part to please casino mogul Sheldon Adelson, who first bankrolled Newt Gingrich and is now talking about giving $100 million to elect Romney. Adelson is a huge supporter of far right-wing Likud Party Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. He publishes a free newspaper in Israel to support all things Netanyahu. Adelson is under investigation for allegedly bribing Chinese officials in Macau in reference to his casino empire there. Since Adelson is potentially an agent of Chinese influence and is a partisan of one of Israel's most right-wing parties, Romney's indebtedness to him is disturbing, to say the least. It is distasteful to have Netanyahu interfering in an American domestic election by openly favoring Romney over Obama. It is distasteful that Romney is promising his donors in Jerusalem a war on Iran when Bush, George W., promised his pro-Israel supporters a war on Iraq. It cost the U.S. at least $3 trillion. Hundreds of thousands of Iraqis were killed. The Gulf has been destabilized for some time. Over 4,000 American soldiers were killed. American power, credibility, and the economy were damaged. Romney is now playing the war enabler, and he's doing it while he's out of the country. It is distasteful that Romney will not meet with Mahmoud Abbas, president of the Palestine Authority, who actually was elected by Palestinians. But all Romney will meet with is a so-called prime minister. Known for cooperation with Israel's Likud party. And this is the one that really gets me. I didn't know this till I read Juan Cole's column. It is distasteful that Romney is holding the fundraiser in the King David Hotel, which was famously blown up by the Zionist terrorist organization Irgun in 1946 in a strike that killed 91 people and wounded dozens, many of them innocent civilians. Irgun leader at the time, Menachem Begin, later a leader of the ruling Likud party, hit the hotel because there were British security offices there which were tracking violent organizations like Begin's during the British Mandate period of Palestine. Begin maintained that he called ahead to warn of the bombing, but that is nonsense. In an attempt to take the edge off the dead, who in 1946 would have taken such a call seriously? When current Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu and other Likud leaders attended a commemoration of the bombing, the British Foreign Office sent a sharp note of protest. Apparently Romney is not finished with insulting London. He can make his half-witted comments about security at the Olympics, but then he goes to a fundraiser at the King David Hotel. The founders of the State of Israel were terrorists by any definition. But, you know, today's terrorist is tomorrow's father of his or mother of her country. Right? Isn't that the way it goes? Wow. Things are just weird. Weird. Did you hear about this couple in Mississippi? They had booked their wedding in advance. The invitations had been sent. The programs printed. But one day before Charles and Teandria Wilson were to be married at the Mississippi church they frequented, they said a pastor there told them they would have to find another church because they were black. There had never been a black wedding at the First Baptist Church in Crystal Springs, Mississippi, since its founding in 1883. And according to the pastor, Stan Weatherford, the reverend, some church members objected so strongly to breaking that precedent that they threatened to fire him from his pastorship. Rather than risk his job, Weatherford, who is white, said he decided to marry the pair at a black church down the road. Jesus. The husband-to-be, Charles Wilson, told ABC's affiliate in WAPT-TV, quote, "My nine-year-old was going to the church with us. How would you say to your nine-year-old daughter, we can't get married there, honey, because guess what, sweetie? We're black." Now, in fairness, the vast majority of Crystal Springs residents, blacks and whites alike, were, quote, blown away, end quote, by the church's decision. One resident, Teresa Norwood, who was born in Crystal Springs, lived there her entire life, said she believes the pastor should have married the Wilsons regardless of the risk to his job. She said that church was their home. What would Jesus have done? He would have married him, without a doubt, because it's the right thing to do. We're all God's children. Oh, this woman, by the way, is white. Oh, God. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. Who am I? I'm Mike Malloy. We're going to open the phones and take your call if you want to join in. 877-996-2556. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. This hour is being sponsored by Kaylin Garwin, or Darwin. Message. Hey, Mike, you the man. I've been a listener since the dim sun stole Florida. Obama's the lesser of two evils, like the choice between a heart attack and cancer, or strychnine and cyanide. The prime examples of his evil are the two biggest crimes in the history of man, the 2008 mortgage fraud and the BP Gulf oil spill. The banker fraud is the largest dollar amount ever stolen. The BP spill is the largest unrecovered oil spill ever. You are one of the few progressive hosts left who has not sold out. I've got a good job, so I thought I would kick you some support. Thanks, Kaylin. Appreciate it very much. Nobody from the Bush administration, the last one, is invited to the Republican National Convention. Why do you think that is? You know why the real reason? First thought is, well, they were so bad, they're an embarrassment. No, 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 no. The reason they're not being invited is because they're not hardcore right-wing enough. Can you believe that? Got to share this with you, and then we're going to come right to your phone calls. Last week, the Agriculture Department put a statement on its website encouraging its employees not to eat meat on Mondays. That's all it said. It was part of an internal newsletter that discusses how staff can reduce their environmental impact while dining at the agency's cafeteria. Just, you know, don't eat meat just on Mondays. Apparently, the directive or the statement was put up on the website without the proper clearance. The newsletter referred to the UN data that cites animal agriculture as a major source of greenhouse gases and climate change. Yeah, we all know that, right? But the agency removed the posting hours after the National Cattlemen's Beef Association denounced it in a news release. The Department of Agriculture often promotes the beef industry by encouraging Americans to eat meat. And a spokesman for the Department of Agriculture says the department does not endorse the Meatless Mondays initiative after all, which is part of a global public health campaign. But not in this country. We don't want global health here, any kind of health here. So now, that was last week. Now, here's the second part of the story. According to the Huffington Post, the hubbub over the Department of Agriculture's retracted directive supporting Meatless Mondays continues. Last week, Republican Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley made a tongue-in-cheek promise to compensate for the recommendation by eating an extra helping of meat on Monday. These sick sons of bitches. You go ahead, Chuck. Just suck it up, baby. Come on. Eat some pork. Eat some bacon. Come on, get a little of that fat floating around inside your arteries, right? PETA responded to Grassley's comment with a death pool, taking bets on how long it would take for Grassley to, quote, succumb to heart disease, diabetes, cancer, or some other meat-related disease, end quote. So today, Grassley continued to show his defiance, this time with his lunch order. Texas's junior senator, John Cornyn, posted the below image to his office Facebook page. The accompanying text reads, Cornyn, Grassley, celebrate Meat Monday. And what's in the photograph are just piles of meat. Just piles of it. Piles of wrapped meat that were ordered from Hill Country. It's a barbecue outfit located in Washington's Penn Quarter neighborhood, not far from the senator's Capitol Hill office. According to the Hill, a staffer said that there was plenty to go around here for the two senators' employees. The lunch included a total of 52 orders of barbecue beef sandwiches, brisket, sausage, ribs, as well as sides of cornbread and macaroni and cheese. Department of Agriculture, don't encourage these people not to eat meat. Stuff it down them. Stuff it in them. Just stuff it in. Come on, the fattier the better. But this is how it is in this sick goddamn country we live in. Department of Agriculture, it's an internal suggestion. Hey, employees, let's have a meatless Monday. Just in recognition of the fact that the production of meat is part of what's destroying the planet. I mean, that's something we don't talk about at all. I mean, it's barely possible to get out global climate change, but meat production destroying everything? Oh, no. Remember, when was it? About 20 years ago or whatever it was, and Oprah Winfrey said something about the cattlemen's, about beef or something, and the Cattlemen's Association jumped real hard in her face, and she went down to Texas and bitch slapped all of them. You remember that? Remember that? Cattlemen's Association. Don't talk about meatless Mondays! God damn it! They're like kindergartners. They're like five-year-olds. This is just so asinine. Grassley going, well, they call for meatless Monday. Remember Freedom Fries? Bunch of goddamn five-year-olds, these right-wingers. How did this happen? How did this happen? Right-wingers saying Freedom Fries. Well, we're going to take French fries off the menu. That's because the French decided they weren't going to contribute to the Iraq invasion. You dirty bastards, you won't go kill people for us, for corporate America? You won't help us bomb the cradle of civilization? And now this. Just a simple tweet directive. It was in a newsletter. To employees, Department of Agriculture, hey, consider meatless Mondays because blah, blah, blah. Grassley and Cornyn and the rest of these goddamn two-year-olds. No insult to two-year-olds. Well, we'll eat two orders of meat on Monday then, goddammit. We'll show you. Yes, sir. Well, I think you boys ought to eat as much meat as you can. Stuff it in, boys. How about some sausage and hot dogs and you know, for breakfast? If the fat content in the rubbery chunks of intestine don't get to you, then the salt will. Come on, do it. I want to see, come on, Cornyn, you psycho bastard. I want to see you, absolutely. I want to see you eat hot dogs, sausages, bacon. Get some of them old pork chops in there. I want you to get the, what is it? What are the ones with all the fat on them, Kathy? End cut? No. What are those pork chops that have all the fat on them?
Invite Rush.
Yeah, get Rush over. And get Beck. Get your buddy, Glenn Beck. Why don't y'all just sit down and start stuffing your ugly, nasty, pale, bloated bodies with this stuff? Come on. Just stuff it down. Come on, Cornyn, you're a big dude. I bet you could eat a whole steer, couldn't you? Come on. Just stuff it in there. Sick bastards. But I digress. Okay, Simon. Simon is listening on XM. Yeah. No. Simon, if you want to be on the program, turn your radio way down. Richard is in Middletown, Delaware, listening on Sirius. Hello, Richard.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm all right.
I'm glad, and it's very good to talk to you. The purpose of the Afghanistan war could be simplified. I take complex thought and see if there's a simple answer.
Okay.
15 years ago or so, they had to test weapon systems, and they needed to test it in a region where the press won't get in. Nobody actually ever wants to go to Afghanistan. So the recourse of testing the weapon systems and all that, it won't be publicized to the world. It's too hard to get reporters in. So, and it's a tribal community. There's no network at all in Afghanistan. So if you had to, if you, like 15 years ago, corporate, you know, what did Eisenhower say? The military.
Yeah, hey, hold on a second, Richard. I got to do a break here, but I don't hear the rest of what you got to say. Just stay right there a minute.
America one flying monkey at a time. Here's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. We're talking with who are we talking with? Hold on just a second. Did our guy hang up? I think so. Was that Joe? Were we talking with you? Joe?
Yes, it's Joe.
Yeah.
Yes, I'd like to make a brief statement. The religious counselors and the medical people at the drone aircraft pilots, they're just there to make sure that trigger mechanism stays functioning. That's it. And the mechanism is the pilots of the drone. Because somewhere, eventually, they're going to start seeing something that's going to hit close to home.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to remind them of their own families. They're going to leave after they've killed a family and go sit at a mall and look around and see all the stuff at the mall that goes to owning things. And it's going to have an effect on them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the medical people are there to monitor and to make sure that that device works, you know. And well, that's the only reason.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. Thanks, Joe.
Sure. Thank you.
Appreciate it. All right, Richard, we were talking with you, although I appreciate what Joe had to say, too. God, that's awful stuff. All right, where were you? Oh, the weapons testing.
Well, yeah, the reason I said 15 years ago, it goes back to the project with the New American Century. When, you know, we had major events.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing about it is that let's put yourself into the position of all the weapons manufacturers and all that. They could test their systems. So if you had to look at planet Earth to figure out a place to test the systems where the world could not get to ask the people that were bombed in their tribal areas, and especially like in Afghanistan, it's like 17,000 tribal little communities just planted all over it.
Mm-hmm.
No internet, no nothing. So if you go back to the project for the New American Century, and they need to test these, you couldn't pick a better place than Afghanistan.
Right.
And that's the reason that it's continuous. It's a non-stop war. And we're testing new things over and over and over. And then we have some of our military on the ground. They're in the test type scenario also, and there's no reporters. Second to that, that's the reason Afghanistan is continuous. Second to that, the Iraqi war can be explained simply only because we needed to take Iraqi oil offline.
Mm-hmm.
They were dumping oil in the market, and the Bushes were totally in bed with the Saudi royals and the Bin Laden family of Saudi Arabia.
Right.
Right? So that can be explained. You know, the Bushes made fortunes off of the Iraqi wars, and Dick Cheney, he made fortunes with Halliburton,
mm-hmm.
pretending to fix Iraq back. But the whole objective of the Iraqi war was to take the Iraqi oil offline. We bombed that nation into oblivion, but there the reporters could get to. So that one had to be worked really carefully, you know?
Yeah.
But this is, it's the military industrial complex that needs a place to test weapons.
It is,
systems,
yeah.
And now we have drones flying over and, you know, and it's continuous. But see, here's my thought, and it was before the election of Barack Obama. I was sitting there, I put so much thought into it, and there was 1 week that you were shaking off the fence, and you were asking yourself and everybody, do you vote for Obama?
Mm-hmm.
Because he voted, like, it was like three things he voted for before the election that you were really disturbed by, the telecommunications bill, and there was some other things. But I was sitting there I was sitting there thinking, if Barack Obama gets elected, will the anti-war movement be abolished? And it was. And the anti-war movement is non-existent. And it will be hard with Barack Obama as president to get Cindy Sheehan back out there or to get the code pink. Right now, the anti-war movement should be full steam, 100%, just going after it. We yep. should be blasting communities everywhere. We should be going saying, stop these wars. But Barack Obama blocked it.
I hear you, Richard, and you make great sense, and I'm glad you called. And I don't know what's going to happen if Obama does get reelected. I don't know if he's going to be a leader where it concerns this and stop the madness. I don't know anymore. I really don't. But I appreciate what you had to say, Richard. Thanks a lot, man. Take it easy. Drive safely.
Talk Radio, it's Mike Malloy.
My mama, she once told me, 25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Keelan Darwin. Keelan's message, Mike, you the man. I've been a listener since the dim sun stole Florida. Obama is the lesser of two evils, like the choice between a heart attack and cancer or strychnine and cyanide. The prime examples of his evil are the two biggest crimes in the history of man, the 2008 mortgage fraud and the BP Gulf oil spill. The banker fraud is the largest dollar amount ever stolen. The BP spill is the largest unrecovered oil spill ever. You're one of the few progressive hosts left who has not sold out. I've got a good job, so I thought I would kick you some support. Kaylin. Thank you, Kaylin. Appreciate it. Very much. Tim's in Detroit. Hey, Tim.
Hey, Mike. I've never been able to confirm what I'm about to say, but I never forgot what I heard from this guy. I was talking to him years ago. I think in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And he was ex-military. And he had said that the U.S. military, I guess it would have to be the, is it the Air Force that handles the nuclear weapons in this country?
I believe it is, yeah.
Well, anyway, they would do these drills, but they wouldn't tell the people about these drills. They would simulate them as if they were actually war conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, they would drill these people who turn the keys, which launch nuclear ballistic missiles, the
right.
strategic ballistic missiles, the big ones. I mean, all nuclear weapons are horrible anyway, but mm-hmm. these are the big ICBMs, and they would. What they found when they would drill these people to turn the keys, they found in the majority of cases the keys would not be turned. And the reason I'm bringing it up tonight is because I think with this drone program, they're trying to find kind of the limits of what humans are capable of doing. In other words, can you look at your fellow human and just kill them remotely?
Well, you know, this argument had a tremendous amount of discussion after the Holocaust, after Auschwitz and Treblinka and Bergen-Belsen and all these death camps. How could humans do that to their fellow humans. I don't care what the religion is. I don't care what the race is. And so the issue that you're bringing up is one that has been certainly debated in modern times heavily, not so much anymore in the public domain, but on the level that you're approaching it from a philosophical point of view. What is the limit that the human mind or soul, whatever you want to call it, will go before it pulls back in revulsion and says, I can't do this?
I was listening to your story tonight, and you've told us a lot of things over the years, and this had to be, for me, the scariest.
Oh, me too.
Of all the stories. I mean, they just acted like these drone guys, like it was no big deal at all. In fact, it seemed like they were happy to do it. I don't know if that's propaganda on the Pentagon's part or if they did do it.
Who knows anymore what the truth is? The fact that these remotely piloted aircraft are flying around in various spots on Earth, and they are being piloted, so to speak, from various places in the United States, and it's now this technology has come to the point now where most of us aren't even aware that it exists, much less that it's at the sophisticated level that it is, where people now can commit remote murder by doing it with these unmanned aircraft. I don't know how much more horrible something can be, Tim. I just don't know anymore.
Well, what's coming, apparently, if you especially look at some of the defense articles out there, supposedly they want to roboticize war completely in the next few years. Where you have sort of these, the real drones, I mean, automatic drones that have programming that do what the program instructs, that is to say, kill human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder, frankly, Mike, and again, I'm in the conspiracy land a little bit here, but I wonder if we don't have that already. I wonder if this story that you were reading off tonight was sort of a propaganda piece to somehow explain there was a human face to these drones, but in fact, they actually are roboticized machines. And, you know, some program in a laboratory programs what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And then just kind of turns them loose in the air, and they go. Cause I don't know if a lot of people could do what these guys were talking about tonight. It seems to go against human nature to murder people remotely.
Well, yeah, but...
or maybe they did, but it was very disturbing stuff. I mean, people can literally just sit there in front of a screen and just kill someone without, and then go and having a beer afterward.
Good
God.
Go home and mow the lawn.
Yeah, I mean that's not rational. I mean, I forgot how the psychologist explained the Holocaust, the murders in the Holocaust. I mean, what was it? I mean, I guess the Jews had to be dehumanized. Was that sort of the rationale?
Well, that was part of it, and that's what's been going on in this country for the past decade, where it concerns Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially the same thing. They haven't been forced to give up their businesses yet in this country. They haven't been forced to wear some sort of symbol identifying them as Muslims. But if you listen to some of the right wingers in this country, people like Ann Coulter, people like Limbaugh, and the rest of these folks, they might as well be talking about Jews in Germany in the 30s. This stuff is beyond me, man. I don't know how to...
So you think the U.S. military now is recruiting people of that sociopathic bent and putting them in front of screens and just saying, okay, go kill X?
I don't see where this is an act of patriotism or an act somehow that defends the United States. I mean, that's how it's being sold to people that you know, this is a fight for freedom, but I can't accept that. I just can't. I'm not capable.
So the Muslims, they're basically so dehumanized now that the military is doing what the Nazis did with the Jews. I mean, there's no.
It's getting close.
Yeah.
It's getting close. Like I say, there are no there are no Muslim death camps yet. There are no special laws that have been written to deny Muslims in this country basic human rights. The Enabling Act of that the Nazis put into effect, you know, none of that has happened in this country. But how close are we?
Well, it sounds like, though, if the story, what you said the night you read from the story, and it's true, it sounds like we're outsourcing our death camps.
Yeah. Well,
like
that's...
Afghanistan is like a death camp, then.
That's another way of putting it. Yeah. That's another way of putting it. Madness, Tim.
It's really getting scary. Anyway.
Thanks for checking in, pal.
Take it easy.
All right. Take care. Yeah, I can't... I don't know how to relate to this stuff. I really don't. You know, on the one hand, it is sold to the American people, and I guess to the people who sit in front of the screens, it is sold as, you know, necessary activity to defend freedom, to cut down on U.S. casualties, to make it easier to kill. I don't know how to relate to it. I mean, I really don't. I thought I did. You know, when I was younger, war was, you know, something that was honorable. I don't know how it got that way, but that's, you know, that's what we were taught. We were taught that war was what you do when everything else fails, which is certainly not true now. It wasn't true in the Bush crime family's operations of this country. But I don't know how to process it. I can't. I mean, I just can't. I usually ignore stories like this. You know, I just ignore them. Can't deal with it. Can't deal with it. Where are we here? Nick is in Los Angeles listening on XM. Hey, Nick.
Hey, Mike. Thank you very much for your show. I just want to just keep patting you on the back to keep going, because at least we got some sort of a good radio airwaves going out here with information from people like you. So kudos to you. Just following up to your last caller, funny enough, Chris Hedges just wrote a great article on TruthDig for that very issue. And the column was called The Careerist. If you haven't read it, it speaks to that very thing of how people get bludgeoned into just doing unspeakable things to other people.
Mm-hmm.
And there's many, you know, examples of that through history. But my question for you tonight was really, about 18 months ago, you used to talk about how you wouldn't vote for Barack Obama again, and you were willing to push it over the edge and hopefully let it all blow up.
Mm-hmm.
And then you seem to have gone back to Barack Obama. We can't support this guy. Unfortunately, he feels like a Manchurian candidate. I think the Democrats or the system has been pulled so far to the right that now they've just made it where the Democratic Party's become a center-center-right party, and we have no choice other than, from the people I've listened to recently, the Green Party seems to be becoming a realistic third choice, even though we may be at a very early stage.
Well, I know how, you know, I'm aware, like you are, how bad things have gotten and how bad they could get, too. I just can't. It's almost the point where I can't offer up a point of view about this election coming up. I just know what I'll have to do. Nick, thanks. I appreciate you checking in. We'll be right back.
A form of suicide. Republican side! Don't you know, you fool?
For the hour.
Open your eyes, time to wake up.
Thanks to Kaylin Darwin for sponsoring this hour. Kaylin's message, Mike, you're the man. I've been a listener since the dim sun stole Florida. Obama is the lesser of two evils, like the choice between a heart attack and cancer or strychnine and cyanide. The prime examples of his evil are the two biggest crimes in the history of man, the 2008 mortgage fraud and the BP Gulf oil spill. The banker fraud is the largest dollar amount ever stolen. The BP spill is the largest unrecovered oil spill ever. You are one of the few progressive hosts left who has not sold out. I've got a good job, so I thought I would kick you some support. Well, thank you very much for the support. I appreciate it very much. Kaylin? Indeed. Matt is in Ketchikan, Alaska. Hello, Matt. Matt? What happened? See if Matt will call back in. Juan is in El Paso, Texas, listening on XM. Hello, Juan.
Mike, how are you, buddy?
Pretty good. How are you?
Wonderful show. Depressing, but wonderful.
Yeah, really.
But that's the way things are nowadays. You always have such wonderful callers, mostly, and I agree with so much of what they say as well as from point of view. But I wanted to say two things. I have to be careful where I tread. Whistleblowers have no protection in this country anymore, so... more so than anything, one has to be extremely careful. The drones are much more technologically superior than anyone can imagine, and they are being used at a much greater rate with a devastating effect on the victims of their attacks in foreign countries, and probably will be deployed in this country before too long. Not with the Hellfire missiles, perhaps, but certainly with the surveillance data. That's one thing. The second thing is, as I can tell you without a doubt, that the United States possesses in its arsenal air power that is a minimum of 40 years ahead of any other country on Earth. And I can't tell you why that is. You can all draw your own conclusions, but I can say that they are the beneficiaries of a tremendous amount of money that is being poured secretly into the defense establishment. And like all the other pigs that are feeding at the trough, there are a few favorite ones in there who are the beneficiaries of this largesse, which usually means it's coming out of the pockets of the poor, the brown, and the black, and the poor white. And this is something that is self-sustaining. If Obama wanted to do something about it, I'm not sure that he could. I have suffered terribly under his depredations in the last 4 years, and I'm bitterly disappointed. And like your other caller, Nick, was so hopeful, and of course, my hopes as well as yours and millions of others have been dashed. Whether that is a reason to stay out of the election, I don't know yet. I don't know, Mike. What do you think?
I'm still wrestling with this question myself. I wish we had a different system where there were multiple parties running and multiple candidates. Frankly, I would prefer a parliamentary system where you actually vote for the party, not for the particular person, because people, I realize this might sound terribly naive, people are much more easily corrupted than an entire political organization or political system. Now, I don't mean that to sound horribly naive, but in the British system or the Canadian system or the Australian system, if I'm not mistaken, you are voting for the party.
Right.
I don't know if that's true in Canada. I'm kind of out of my depth here, but I know in some places you don't vote for a candidate, you vote for the party, and the party's responsible to present a candidate that is going to lead that party. Whereas in our system, the only people responsible for presenting a candidate now are the people with the billions and billions and billions of dollars. It has nothing to do with a political party. I don't know what to do in this next election. My feelings about Obama are definitely, he's not what we need right now. He's not providing the kind of leadership that is desperately needed. And when you turn though and look at this freakish, Mitt Romney that has even a more tenuous grasp of reality than George W. Bush did. And I don't know. I had a friend tell me a long time ago, you know, you've got to stop voting for the lesser of two evils. You've got to do something to make the system change. Well, I can't. I mean, I can be part of a movement. I can be part of a 10, 20, 30 million member strong protest. But so I don't know. I don't even like to talk about that particular topic because I don't want to have anything to do with influencing anybody one way or the other. Not that I could or should or would. I'm just saying, you know, a lot of people will listen to a radio show and start thinking that the person behind the microphone has sense, which in so many cases is not true. Juan, I have to leave it there. There's the music. Thank you. I appreciate you checking in. And thanks for tuning in yourself, Truth Seeker. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. If you aren't